Hi. It's been a little while, hasn't it? It's 6 days before the winter solstice. I'm here at the bench between the two hawthorn hedges along the Viking Way in Lincolnshire in the east of England where I live. The sky is just starting to change hue, and it's this pastel washed mix of brighter blue through to a very pale blue. The sun has just set about 10 minutes ago. It was this beautiful golden fiery ball. And then it slowly slipped over the horizon into Nottinghamshire. And now it leaves this little pinky orange glow on the horizon.
Welcome to Edge of the Hedge, a podcast guiding you in rekindling and nurturing your connection with nature. I'm Hannah Sylvester, a herbalist and nature educator from Lincolnshire in the UK. Each episode, you can join me on an audio journey as I walk through the landscape. In this episode, we find ourselves in midwinter. The ground is hard with frost, and I've returned to where this podcast was born, on a bench between two hedges, at the edge of the hedge.
In the last few days, we've experienced some quite unusual weather. The temperatures have really dropped, and we've had some proper frosts. And so even though there hasn't been any inkling of snow here, even though there has been in other parts of the country, the whole landscape has been dusted with frost. And it's brought a lot of light of a different kind, and really helps you to notice things that you might not ordinarily see at this time of year. Or in a way, it helps to show things a little more clearly that otherwise might become lost in a mesh of green or a mesh of brown. Even something so simple as grass on the verges, when it's been left to grow a little bit longer, has become this really beautiful array of higgledy-piggledy grass blades that ordinarily you just walk past, but now have this distinct wintry beauty and shows them in a different light. Here along this walk today, and looking at the hawthorn hedge bottom that lines this route, you can see these almost razor clam shaped and styled ice droppings that have fallen off the hawthorn today. Like someone has poured some icy plaster of Paris over the hawthorn hedge to take an imprint of its structure. A and then it's been knocked away, leaving these fragments of shapes of hawthorn branches along the ground. It's really stunning. I've never noticed that before. For continuity and a sense of place and grounding, for these new episodes of Edge of the Hedge, I'll be starting each episode here at the bench where the idea was born, and then weaving new tales and tracking the seasons and tracking the changes of the landscape as the months progress. I really hope you'll be able to join me in that journey. This time of year is always really striking for a number of reasons. One reason in particular is that, apart from the road noise you can hear behind me in the distance, nature is really quiet. There's no skylarks. There's no calls for territory. And there's just the occasional bird that you notice. Like the honking pheasant that you might be able to hear in the background.
In the Northern Hemisphere, the winter solstice occurs in December, usually around the 21st of December. It's the 24-hour period when there's the shortest number of daylight hours, and so it's often referred to as the shortest day or longest night. Daylight hours vary naturally depending on exactly where you're situated, but in London, for example, there'll be 7 hours, 49 minutes and 42 seconds of daylight this year. And the actual moment of the solstice will be 9:48 p.m. on the 21st of December. On this day, the sun takes its shortest path through the sky, and with the earth being tilted on its axis, the winter solstice is the point in the year when the North Pole points furthest away from the sun, and so that's why the Northern Hemisphere is so cold at this time of year. My weather app tells me that where I live, the sun will rise at 8:14 in the morning and set 3:46 in the afternoon. This year, for the first time ever, I've been lucky enough to be able to take the day off work. I'd like to see the solstice sun rise and set. When will the sun rise and set where you are? The word solstice is derived from the Latin solstitium, which means sun stands still. And there's another solstice in the summer, of course, in June. The solstice is where the path of the sun appears to stop before changing direction. In the days following the winter solstice, daylight hours will gradually lengthen until the summer solstice, around the 21st of June. There's two schools of thought as to when the winter season actually starts. Meteorological winter uses the Gregorian calendar, and this is used by meteorologists and climate scientists, with the thought that winter starts on the 1st of December and runs through the full months of December, January and February. Then there's astronomical winter, which starts at the winter solstice and ends at the spring equinox, which this coming year will be on the 20th of March. With astrological winter, the dates aren't fixed because of the elliptical orbit of the Earth around the Sun, and so they shift around a period of a couple of days. The notion of astronomical winter with the flex of dates, I have to say, sits a little better with me, especially given the later snaps of cold weather that we've been having in recent decades, with the colder and snowier weather reaching into March and sometimes April. As the daylight hours reduce, Autumn slides into winter, and temperatures cool. The plant world picks up these signals. Growth slows. Many plants and trees shed their leaves, die back, and return to root and soil, and remain dormant for the cooler, darker months to protect themselves against the harsher conditions. They wait for the signals of warmth and light to start their new growth. Plants are clever, aren't they? Perhaps we humans could do with taking a leaf of inspiration from them. And if we can, take the time to slow and recuperate over the colder months.
The terrain underfoot at the minute is quite firm, understandably. After all, the land is quite frozen. But another joy of this really cold snap we're having are the different sounds and grass that, you know, you walk across and it doesn't really make a noise usually. Comes into a whole new world of sound. And the puddles of water along the farm track that are normally super slidey and super muddy, taking a whole new level of harshness and crunchiness. The hawthorn berries were strikingly large this year. And this frost has certainly put paid to what was left of the green leaves on the hawthorn. But there's still some berries clutching on, really bold and vibrant and red. Like little Christmas lights along the hedgerow. And just like the frost and ice has highlighted the grass, it's also highlighted the structure and formation of leaves, and without even needing to get close to them, you can see their really delicate, fine vein structure, an accumulation of thicker crystals towards the edge of the leaves. It's like this time of year is inviting us to kind of look at the bare bones, really appreciate what's underneath and what holds everything together. It's a couple of days on from when I recorded that little bit in the field, in the frost. My field recorder ran out of battery just as it was starting to get a little bit too dark to see anything. Right now, I'm in the centre of the village where I live, and I'm stood in the churchyard. And one of the reasons why I came here in particular was that there's some really great holly trees here. And this was the tree that I wanted to tell you a little bit about on this episode. Today's a pretty dull day. Full cloud cover. I don't think we'll be seeing much in the way of a stunning sunset tonight. I'm surrounded by quite a few bare trees. There's a really lovely lime tree, linden tree, just over the way. And a very, very knobbly horse chestnut tree. And the plants that are still growing and still green that are sticking out at the moment are evergreens. And holly is a really good example of an evergreen tree. There's a couple of different holly trees here, but this one that I've chosen has branches low enough for me to see really closely, and a trunk that I can get pretty close to as well. What's immediately apparent about this particular holly tree are its quite classic bright red berries.
Even though nature can appear bare and stark at this time of year, there are some plants and trees that still stand bold and strong. Evergreens. As the name suggests, they are ever green. They retain their green foliage through all the seasons. I think for all of us, there's plants we tend to associate with the winter season, with Yule, Christmas, however you choose to celebrate or not. When you were younger, what did you used to draw to represent this time of year or to decorate cards with? I know my default for drawing in the corner of envelopes at this time of year was always a pair of spiky holly leaves with round red berries between them. It's one of the few plants or leaves that most people can draw if you ask them to, even if they're not remotely interested in nature. I like that. A plant so synonymous with this time of year that it's embedded into the very fabric of how we picture the season. Holly is part of a botanical family called the Aquifoliaceae, which has about 400 species within it, of which most are hollies. Their native distribution spans from northern Scandinavia right down to Algeria in North Africa, and from eastern regions of North America across to China. Although there are parts of Scotland where it doesn't grow so well. It doesn't thrive in soils that are constantly waterlogged, or in regions where there are long periods of frost. The English holly is known in Latin as Ilex aquifolium. Ilex comes from an old name for the evergreen oak or holm oak, a tree originally native to the eastern Mediterranean. And holly was said to bear some resemblance to this tree. Curiously, whilst the other half of its Latin name, aquifolium, makes you perhaps think of something to do with water, it's actually an old name that means pointed leaves. And it's these pointy leaves that are really synonymous with the holly leaf. They're spiky. Holly usually holds onto these leaves for about 3 to 4 years. When you see holly growing as a tree, it can vary in height, but usually reaches a maximum height of about 10 to 15 metres tall. And when you get up close with one, you'll notice its bark is quite smooth. And it has these luscious, deep, dark, glossy green leaves that are always pointed sharply at the top. And will often have large pointy teeth around the edge of the leaf, the margin. However, they're not always pointed around the edge. Some Spanish research published around 10 years ago looked into why you can find a mix of spiky edged and smooth edged leaves on the same holly tree. This is botanically known as heterophyllous, essentially meaning different forms of leaves on the same plant. These scientists found that the spiny leaves grew significantly more on the lower branches, under 2.5 metres high, which was the reaching height of the red deer that grazed in that region, alongside goats and other herbivores. This correlated with other studies showing that plants genetically adapt themselves to cope with environmental changes. In this case, growing prickles and spines as a direct response to being eaten by herbivores and to increase their survival. Plants are way more clever than we give them credit for. The wood of holly is incredibly dense and considered hardwood and very resistant to impact. It's used for wood turning and engraving, and it's very pale in colour, which is probably why it's very suitable for turning white chess pieces. People also say it makes good firewood too, as it burns well, regardless of whether it's damp or seasoned. Holly is quite a slow-growing tree, and it's dioecious, meaning that there are male trees and female trees with a fairly even split between numbers of each. When a holly tree reaches about 20 years old, it starts to produce small white flowers in early summer that are usually pollinated by bees. And it's these flowers that gradually turn into bright, polished, scarlet red berries that are so synonymous with winter. Whilst these berries are one of the many red berries that are not safe for human consumption, they cause vomiting and diarrhea. They make incredibly valuable food for birds and other wildlife over the winter months, especially when they're a little softer after the first frosts. Through eating these berries, birds play a really valuable role in continuing the life cycle of the holly tree. Each berry contains 4 seeds, and so after enjoying a tasty snack, the bird will poop out the seeds onto the land, dispersing the seed, and then some of those seeds will germinate into holly trees, which in time will create more berries for the birds. What an excellent symbiotic relationship.
I really wouldn't like to guess at all how many berries there are on this tree, but on this little branch that's stuck out in front of me, it's about 15 centimetres, 6 inches long. I can see, what's that look? 24, 25 red berries. I multiply that by the amount of branches that there are in this tree. That's a lot of berries. Which means a lot of food for birds. Did you hear that alarm call? I think that's a missel thrush. I haven't seen one for years, but very occasionally, walking through here, I've heard that alarm call. I just want to catch sight of it, but it's very good at hiding.
That missel thrush I heard in the churchyard, giving its striking alarm call, was likely alarmed at me, standing underneath its supper source. A curious looking human with big round things attached to their ears and wielding a furry stick close to their food tree. Headphones and a field recorder to you and I. I've heard this missel thrush before when I've been walking through the churchyard, but I'm yet to see it. It's a curious alarm call that slightly reminiscent of a magpie alarm call in a way. This rattly, stuttered sound, but a bit harsher and kind of like one of those old style wooden ratchet rattles that people used to wave around at football matches. It certainly makes you prick up your ears and take notice. I'm really glad to hear this missel thrush, because they're actually endangered and on the red list of the UK Birds of Conservation Concern. What that means is that they've undergone a severe decline in population in the UK since 1800. And also, in the last 25 years, breeding numbers have fallen by about 50%. And so they're threatened with global extinction. I remember seeing both song and missel thrushes fairly regularly in my youth when I was a keen birder in the 1980s. But I couldn't tell you the last time I spotted one until earlier this year, when I glimpsed one sitting on the wall of my neighbour's house across the road, and then hearing this one. Speaking of spotting, it's the spotty chest of the song and missel thrushes that are often the first things you notice. Missel thrushes have black spots and are larger in size than the song thrush. Back in my younger birding days, I didn't actually know that they get their name from the fact that the mistletoe is one of their favourite berries to eat, but they also love to eat rowan berries and holly berries. There's plenty of rowan in this village, and there's even a tree with some mistletoe growing in its upper branches. But I'm really glad there's a plentiful supply of holly berries for the missel thrush. Feast well, little fierce one.
There's that pretty famous Christmas carol, isn't there? The Holly and the Ivy. This holly tree that I'm stood next to has hundreds and hundreds of vines of ivy that are growing from the bottom, and ivy leaves protecting its trunk up to about halfway, when all you can see are these twisty, turny, snake-like stems of the ivy reaching all the way up to the top of the tree. There's this curious misunderstanding that it's not good for trees to have ivy growing around them. The ivy actually provides protection for the trunk of the tree and increases biodiversity and life living with and within the tree. From what I can see from the underneath where the ivy is laced around the tree, the trunk looks pretty straight and relatively smooth. And then around, coming off the side of the trunk from about, I would say, just above my head, so about just over 6 feet, just a couple of metres, there's branches coming off the main trunk, maybe around four or five around the same level, at a distance of maybe about 15, 20 centimetres between each set of branches coming off. So quite tightly packed branches. It's actually, in places, quite difficult to see through to the sky. And the colour of the bark is kind of like a browny dark grey, with the branches off having these almost sort of elliptical dots of sort of lighter cream, light brown to them. Looking at the top side of each of the leaves, it's a really luscious, deep, dark green colour with a light green vein running through the middle and slightly darker veins running off the central vein. And then around the edge of the leaf, that same lighter green from the middle streaks around the edge like someone outlining it with a light green felt tip pen. And that colour matches the back of the leaf. It's quite a beautiful, striking difference in colour. And one that when you see it from afar, makes you appreciate how beautiful it is. For all that the leaves are really spiky on holly, the thinner stems are a very slightly sort of mid-shade of green and perfectly round and incredibly strong. There's one here that I can see is being pruned. And where the stem's being cut, it's solid on the inside and almost like a sort of a pale cream colour. But yeah, that's really tough. So yeah, this tree's definitely a survivor, isn't it? And let's face it, if it's going to be around throughout the growing season, it's got to be quite hardy. The leaves feel, well, as tough as the stems that they come off, really. They're very, very smooth. Very smooth. And you can only just about feel the veins on the back of the leaf. And then when you reach those slightly spikier parts of the leaf at the apex of the leaf, the top of the leaf. Yeah, they are pretty sharp, aren't they? I wonder how long it's been here. I wonder how old it is. The rain's starting to pick up a little bit now. I think I might head home. It's just getting a bit chilly. Stick the kettle on, make a cup of tea. Could spend a bit of time with you, Holly. Tea. Nice and warm. Let me tell you a bit more about holly.
Perhaps not surprisingly, given its prominence in the landscape at this time of year, and all year round, there is a huge amount of folklore and tradition surrounding the holly tree. As well as being commonly known as holly, here in Lincolnshire, it's also known as prick hollin and prick holly. And it's been called Prickly Christmas. And then, other parts of the country, it's known as just Hollin or Christmas. Holm and Holver are also names that pop up regularly when looking at historical literature about this tree. And various places around the UK share the name of this ancient tradition-laden tree. Hollybush in Hertfordshire and Holver in Suffolk. Just to name a couple. The traditional carol or folk song, The Holly and the Ivy, is also something that can often come to mind when speaking of this tree. The usual tune of this song was said to have been collected by a folk song collector, by a woman named Mary Clayton in Gloucestershire in the early 1900s. Henry VIII also wrote a song about the holly. And Dating right back to the times of Pliny, holly was considered to be a tree that was apotropaic, meaning that it had the power to avert bad luck or evil. In Hampshire, it was thought that children could be cured of whooping cough if they drank cow's milk from a bowl that was made from holly tree. And perhaps my favourite story is that of a farmer in Northern Ireland who was left with a stone-throwing poltergeist after having annoyed the fairies by sweeping his chimney with a holly branch. After all, maybe this farmer should have known better, given that holly was considered to be a gentle tree and one that was very much liked by the fairy population. This mirrors the tradition that's noted right across the UK, where right up until the early 1900s, it was considered highly unlucky for farmers to cut holly down, and they'd even cut their hedges around it to avoid doing so. In December, the Romans sent boughs of holly to friends as gifts at the time of Saturnalia, a tradition that's thought to have inspired the Christmas and Yuletide decorations of today. And in the Druid tradition, it's regarded as one of the noble trees of the wood, assigned its own letter in the Druid tree alphabet, the Ogham. In the Christian tradition, holly was said to have grown from under the footsteps of Christ, with the red berries linked to the blood of Christ. Perhaps, though, given where we find ourselves in the calendar of the year, just before Christmas, you might also wish to consider the old Glamorgan tradition that it's unlucky to bring holly into the home before Christmas Eve, and equally unlucky to take it down before Twelfth Night. I think I'll leave mine woven into the wreath hung on my door, just in case. Honestly, there's enough material about holly and its folklore and traditions to fill several podcast episodes. But I hope this has whet your appetite a little, or maybe inspired you to start a little conversation about it around the dining table this winter. How do your family view the holly tree? What are your traditions surrounding it? How does it feature in your winter? And next time you're out walking and you see those bright blood red berries, take a moment to slow your pace and spend a moment or two with the holly tree to appreciate it. Contemplate its place in our human history and give a little thanks for its part in protecting wildlife, providing nesting space and food for birds. And for those reasons especially, maybe think twice before you chop a holly tree back. I've been inspired to try a little something else to accompany this episode, and I've created a Spotify playlist of music that I've found inspirational or, for me, feels like it evokes the spirit of the season, and I thought it would be really nice to share with you. So I'll share the link for that playlist on social media, and I'd love to hear if there's any music that you find inspirational or comforting at this time of year. It would be great to hear about your thoughts or traditions about the holly tree, so please feel free to tag Edge of the Hedge in your social media posts, or why not drop me a line. Over the coming weeks, I'll be sharing a few pictures and some more details about the holly tree, so do come and find me on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. And I hope you'll join me again next time for another episode of Edge of the Hedge, where we'll be following the season and tracking nature as it changes throughout the year. And if you've enjoyed my podcast, it would be so lovely if you could leave a rating or review on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. And do feel free to share it with your friends and family and anyone else who you think might enjoy it. Thank you so much for listening. Take good care of yourself and the nature that we share this planet with. Edge of the Hedge is written and produced by Hannah Sylvester, with original music by Mark Holmes.